And would it be correct to assume they are high experts?
Yeah, they're high experts, Jeb said with a sigh, pulling out four tubes of gold.
To hell with that, son. You want me to play housekeeper for some schoolteachers while an entirely new set of physics just dropped in our laps? I got a science, man. If you try to make me tuck sheets, I'll kill myself. Do you have any idea the kinds of things that are possible now?
Jeb leaned in and whispered in the old man's ear. Magical energy sources that weigh half a pound and could take a ship to Mars. Eddie jerked away, his eyes wide. He searched Jeb's gaze for a moment.
Fucking by me! Fucking by me right the fuck now!
Eddie said, holding his shackles out and wiggling his fingers.
What did you tell him?
I made him an implicit offer of something his nerdy kind has been seeking for 1,000 years, Jeb said, handing over the money. Jeb took his 8 new staffers to the paperwork room, signed a bunch of papers, and made his ownership official, then paused when he noticed something odd. Where are the slave collars? The missed ones that control their behavior, Jeb asked, pointing at the simple leather collars on the middle-aged slaves. Collis chuckled.
If you like, we can lease one of them to you for a bob a month, but most of these slaves aren't worth that level of insurance.
His gaze flickered to Eddie. How much is a missed slave collar? Jeb asked.
I told you, a bob a month.
How much to buy one? Jeb clarified.
Oh, 250 bulbs is the typical amount we add if a client intends to buy the collar outright with a particularly expensive and valuable slave.
What if I just wanted the collar?
We do need them to keep control over the most unruly, powerful individuals. But we could spare one or two for, say, 300 apiece.
Jeb sucked in a breath through his teeth. Almost 20 pounds of gold each. He currently did not have that much, but he would. I'll revisit that subject soon, Jeb muttered, finishing his signature. He didn't want the slave collar so much for the slave collar aspect of it. He wanted the big control lens for his own creations along with the other mist-based guts to hand over to Eddie, his R&D department.
Of course.
If any more NASA folks, astrophysicists, roboticists, or rocket scientists come into your possession, I'd be happy to buy them, Jeb said.
I'll keep that in mind, Collis said. If we find such a person, we will contact your staff at the manor.
Collis laced his fingers together.
You know, most human men who come by are far more interested in purchasing attractive young females. You are a welcome outlier, in that you seem to be purely motivated by practicality and profit. I think you'll make quite a splash in Somnath.
You better believe it, Jeb said, standing and leaving without another word. It was probably a bit rude, but Jeb didn't want to be buddies with a slave trader. He led his group of 8 back to the mansion. A few of them flinched at the rough state of the exterior, but most seemed to be happy simply to have a place to sleep. Yeah, it's a fixer-upper. That's what you guys are for. Luckily, there was a lot of overlap between a janitor and a handyman. Mrs. Lang had basically gotten him 4 people good with their hands by ensuring cook number 2 had some carpentry experience as well. Mr. Lang himself was a contractor, which suited Jeb perfectly. Jeb took them inside the mansion and closed the door. All right, everyone, gather round. I'm about to give you the speech. They gave him their attention. Okay, first of all, we will never be friends. Jeb scratched his head, chuckling, as the room full of middle-aged men and women frowned at him. Jeb cleared his throat. I believe that there are certain doors, certain possibilities in a relationship that close permanently upon one person purchasing another person. Friendship is one of them. I don't want any of you pretending you like me for fear that I'll beat you or resell you. I am your boss. I do not care if you like me, and now that you're here, you will not be beaten or resold, regardless of what you do. The highest priority for you is simply making sure this job goes off without a hitch. So contradict me, second guess me, tell me when I'm fucking up. But as soon as I tell you to do something, I expect you to do it. The assembled people watched him intently, paying careful attention to his words. For my part, I will make sure you're paid and cared for until the job is over, at which point I give you my word I will set you free and give you the mansion. Make a school out of it or something. I don't care. Mrs. Lang frowned.
What do you mean by the job?
Ladies and gentlemen, you may or may not have noticed that the vast majority of you have a background in education. This is not by accident. I believe there is a killer stalking the streets in Somnath. This particular killer has been targeting at-risk children, snatching orphans and children separated from their parents, picking them off, killing them in order to raise their level. Unfortunately, children that fit those criteria are pretty abundant recently.
Mrs. Lang's jaw dropped. That's horrible.
Mr. Everett simply scowled, his usually cheerful demeanor turning ugly. Now, I've been deputized by an Imperial enforcer to handle the problem.
Jeb pulled the copper plate out of his pocket and flashed it at them before they could look at it too closely.
It might be hard to take him seriously when his deputy badge looked like a mudflap girl. The job is this. I'm going to relocate several dozen at-risk children in order to lure out the killer. When he sniffs around for the person intruding on his territory, I am going to kill him. Your job is to take care of the kids and keep them in the mansion. This job could take several months, but in the end, we'll get several dozen homeless kids a place to sleep and hopefully murder a serial killer. Fun, right?
This would never fly in America, Mr. Everett said.
Good thing we're not in America.
You can't just arbitrarily kidnap children for the sake of laying a trap for a serial killer.
Why not?
Can't you just investigate?
Mrs. Everett asked, clutching her chest.
Kidnapping children seems...
extreme? Jeb asked. I never said I wouldn't be investigating. I'll be doing that, too. If it helps, don't think of it as kidnapping. Think of it as pulling these kids out of a serial killer's crosshairs.
Being abducted can do serious damage to a kid's mind. It can impact them for the rest of their life, Mrs. Lang said.
More than starving on the street or getting murdered? Jeb asked, raising a brow. Besides, mental health is what I bought you guys for.
Jeb motioned to the two outstanding teachers.
I assume the two of you have master's degree in developmental psychology? He eyed Mr. Everett and Mrs. Lang.
True,
Mr. Everett admitted.
But dear, kidnapping them?
Mrs. Lang asked, looking up at her husband.
Sweetheart, I think this is one of those situations where it's better us than them.
What about me?
Eddie asked.
This mist lens converts magic into jet fuel, Jeb said, pulling the lens out of his backpack and tossing it at the scientist.
Knock yourself out. A minute giggle rose out of the scientist's throat, and he began petting the lens like Gollum with the one ring.
First things first, Jeb said, clapping his hands. Get this place ready for company. Mr. Everett, Mrs. Lang, you're in charge. Eddie, you're with me.
Jeb took out his remaining tube of gold.
Supplies, he said, handing it to Mrs. Lang. He also took out the deeds that proved he owned them and passed them over to their respective person. Also take these. You did more to earn them than I did. Carry them on your person, hang them in your room, whatever you want. I'll sign the release when we've got the guy I'm looking for.
That taken care of, Jeb spun on his heel and went back out the front door, Eddie trailing behind him. Jeb broke into a light jog, clomping his way around the back of the mansion, where he'd parked the jeep and trailer. Right beside the mansion was what appeared to be a storm cellar, two big double doors on rusted hinges. They led down to a rather large basement, which stretched about 30 paces in either direction, plenty for a single man to set up a small lab/production facility. Jeb needed somewhere to grind out the gold bullion once he really started spending, somewhere preferably out of line of sight. There would be enough people wondering where he got his money from. He also wanted to see what a real scientist could do with mist engines. Note to self, get more mist engines. In all likelihood, a mist engine was incredibly valuable given that it could be used to power a lens mine.
Welcome to your new lab, Jeb said, motioning to the musty expanse.
A spider skittered up one of the stone support beams.
What do you think?
Eddie sniffed, glancing at the ceiling.
It needs ventilation, unless you want dust to suffocate on carbon monoxide. And a light source, tools and a workbench, and a computer for coding and drafting, and a generator to run aforementioned drafting computer.
Jeb glanced at the smooth stone ceiling. Start a list of what you need, then give it to Mrs. Lang. Eddie nodded. In the meantime, help me unload the trailer.
Eddie's eyes bulged when Jeb started unloading boxes full of jewelry and lenses from the back of the small trailer. His peg leg made carrying heavy things extra awkward with only one foot to balance on. Jeb used his mist to steady himself and stop from toppling over. He'd gotten stronger over the last few weeks, but he was still only able to lift 30 or 40 pounds with his mind. A mist attribute of 16 was good, especially compared to the average Joe, but not great, especially compared to the average mist user. I wonder if I can get some new rings. I wonder if they would work. Jeb's stat rings had simply stopped working after the powwow with the gods themselves. They'd been little more than paperweights by the time he'd gotten back to the real world. They had funded his first couple weeks in an inn before the spike started nagging at him again. Jeb wasn't sure if the rings didn't work because he was no longer connected to the system, or if it was because they'd been burnt out, but the guy he'd sold them to had said they were non-magical and paid him a handful of silver for the two rings. Jeb had to assume the guy wasn't lying because, as far as the salesman knew, everyone could use the system to identify objects, and lying would be ousted in a matter of seconds. So, assuming I didn't get shafted, I could probably buy some new ones. Still, what about contact with the gods that caused his rings to lose their juice? Speaking of attributes, Jeb thought, glancing over at Eddie. Eddie, what's your class?
What class?
Your level.
0.
The scientist said, holding up a circular finger.
I went through the easy tutorial and listened to a bunch of safety talks and whapped a straw man with a wooden sword a couple of times until they let me go. When I got back to Earth, I immediately put myself out of harm's way.
Why? Jeb asked.
Because on average, every actual fight I saw, 12% of the people involved got murdered,
Eddie said with a shrug.
It takes about 90 life-threatening fights to achieve level 20 and get a class. Extrapolating from that information by using 0.88 survival rate raised to the power of 90 to illustrate the total number of fights reveals I would have a 1 in 100,000 chance of surviving until the end.
You realize the 12% goes down as people figure out what they're doing, right? That number doesn't account for experience, Jeb mused.
That number also doesn't account for the fact that I'm goddamn 60 years old, with weak muscles and slow reflexes. I can barely lift 50 pounds. I'm not a young man full of piss and vinegar. What do you say we call the math even?
Eddie said, setting the box down against the wall and rubbing his back. True, he's not exactly adventurer material. But... Eddie, if you want to figure out how to combine human and mist tech together, we're going to need to get you a class. The skinny old man puffed up his chest and heaved out a sigh.
That's what I was afraid of.
A thought occurred to Jeb. You think you could modify a bomb disposal robot?
Does a bear shit in the woods?
Excellent. Add bomb disposal robot to your list. I'm sure they're not in high demand right now. In the meantime, we need to pawn some of this stuff. I need to go on a shopping spree. Chapter 12. Run, Forrest. You're serious? Jeb asked.
No humans allowed,
the hulking Mila said, holding up an orange palm in front of his face.
Surely you can read the sign?
He motioned to a big white sign with scribbles on it. This is usually the part where the bribe works, Jeb muttered to himself, glancing greedily through the window, where dozens of minor magic items were sitting on glittering glass stands. Magic clips, magic pens, magic floaty paperweights. Farther back, resting inside the glass counter under the watchful eye of the clerk, were dozens of wands, each one handcrafted with magnificent decorative motifs that hinted at their function. Behind the counter were rich, oiled boxes with silver and gold rings, protected by an iron grate covered with glowing runes. It was enough to make him drool.
I've got money. You can see I've got money, can't you? Jeb asked, motioning to the case of gold under his arm.
Selling tubs of people's jewelry had netted him a whopping 60 bulbs. Turns out a fair amount of the stuff was gold-plated. Add that to some steep price gouging, and he'd walked away with only a bit of cash. Jeb hadn't expected to get retail price for the jewelry, obviously, but
he knew the seller had to be making money hand over fist reselling those chains, watches, and jewels. Since when is 60 grand only a bit of cash, anyway? Answer, when you're pretending to be rich.
I can see you got money, the guard drawled. I'm sorry to tell you that your money's no good here. Non-human citizens only, I'm afraid. The establishment doesn't believe your fat monkeys can be trusted with magical equipment just yet.
Jeb's jaw dropped. Did I just get discriminated against? But I'm rich. Rich people don't get discriminated against. No, wait. I'm thinking of rich and famous people. Jeb took one last longing look at the candyland that lay beyond the glass window, watched a richly dressed Keegan enter the shop, then turned away. He might be able to find a way to get what he needed out of that shop at a later date. It wouldn't do him any good to make a scene right here. Where'd you now? Jeb thought, stepping into the center of the mall, glancing around. Just like humans had hermit crabbed into tons of abandoned buildings, aliens loved the mall. The previous bazaar of Solnath had gravitated into a mall south of the ruins of Dodger Stadium, clearing out the wares of the previous occupants and setting up shop. Even the fancy shops like the one he'd just been refused entry had made their way inside the massive building, taking up residence on the upper floors, while the fishhawkers, farmers, blacksmiths, and general non-magical wares settled to the bottom of the four-story mall. Jeb had 40 bulbs on his person because he'd been expecting to buy some magical equipment, and now he found that the rest of his day he'd planned on spending shopping had become rather open. Well, that can't be the only shop in town that sells magical junk. Jeb fixed his head on straight and started looking in earnest. In total, Jeb found 4 places that sold magical equipment to the ruling class. 3 of them simply turned their noses up, and the last one laughed in his face. I can't waste my entire day on something that's pretty obviously a lost cause here, Jeb thought, heading down the unmoving escalator and aiming for the door leading out into the glaring light of day.
Psst! Jeb glanced up. Hey, buddy!
A whisper from the Barnes & Noble across the hall caught Jeb's attention. The bookstore itself was poorly lit with all the lights off, shadows flickering from shelf to shelf, and 9/10 of the windows covered in some kind of awful graffiti, leaving only a narrow band of the interior visible. Nope, Jeb said, turning away.
You're looking for a place to spend some of that cash, right?
The whisper called after him.
We got the answers, for a price.
Jeb glanced back at the defiled Barnes & Noble, brow cocked. He looked over the graffiti more carefully this time. Plastered among the poor drawings were the words boldly written, SURCHENGIN, search engine, in big capital letters across the front window. What the hell is this? Did some feral species of goblin move into the Barnes & Noble? Jeb didn't know if goblins were a thing in this new reality, but he wouldn't put it past them. Then a kid stepped out into the light of the hallway. He was maybe 12, with a Cobra Kai headband and a suit that was 6 sizes too big for him. Oh, kids. I guess it was close enough with the feral goblins.
Welcome, traveler, to a suppository of human knowledge. Do you need information on how to farm, build a boat, make mortar, brew, fish? The search engine has the information you need to get by. How are you going to survive the apocalypse if you don't know how you're going to survive the apocalypse?
Come to think of it, there's probably millions of white-collar workers who don't know a damn thing about how to get by and need to find a new niche before they are forced out of the city. And without the internet, you need books. Hey, these kids are pretty clever, or at least whoever's leading them. Of course, you can't let a child know you think they're clever or they'll walk all over you. Suppositories go in the butt. You mean repository, and you spelled both search and engine wrong.
I know that,
the kid said, bristling.
Nancy didn't know how to spell them, and she didn't bother to ask when she was putting up the sign. And now you told a stranger Nancy's name. Great. Good job.
Another kid said, slapping the first one on the back. This one was dressed more like a typical teen, with a t-shirt and jeans, but wearing a ridiculous amount of gold chains.
I guess I couldn't have been the only one looting. My name's Jebediah Trapper. I bought the Lindhorn Mansion up on the northeast side of the city. I'm a former sergeant in the army, and I know a thing or two about magic tricks. There, now we ain't strangers no more.
Nice one, Forrest Gump,
the preteen chortled. Jeb clenched his teeth. Perhaps in his effort to relate to children, he'd pulled dusty lines out of his lexicon that seemed to match the occasion and accidentally opened himself up to ridicule. Let's move past that. You said you knew where to spend my cash? Jeb asked.
Yeah, we'll show you on a map. Come inside.
The preteen boy motioned inside the darkened building. Nuh-uh, Jeb said, shaking his head. Looks like a trap.
I told you.
The freckled kid in the suit whispered to his buddy before the other one pinched him. The one in the gold chain sighed.
Okay, look. There's a human dude who sells the kind of stuff you're looking for.
And how do you know what I'm looking for?
Because we've been watching you since you tried to bribe that bouncer,
the one in the suit blurted. Makes sense. Jeb nodded. You guys trying to rob me?
What? No!
The kid in the chains protested. Jeb looked him in the eye. Ever so slowly, his gaze slid away from Jeb's face. Chick-click. Jeb heard the sound of a gun cock from the empty stalls across the hall, and he almost sighed in disappointment.
Hands above your head!
Kids between the age of 7 and 12 came out of the woodwork, every single one of them pointing a gun at him that didn't belong in their prepubescent hands. They were wearing all kinds of clothes, from Mad Max to Notice Me. A few of the girls were slathered in amateurish amounts of makeup, while even some of the guys were too, although in a more war paint style. Reluctantly, Jeb put his hands up. Hey, I'll be the first one to congratulate you guys on a well-executed ambush. But you've got a bit of a problem with your fields of fire.
Oh?
The tallest kid, wearing a Rufio-looking mohawk, asked. In a circular ambush like this one, you all would want to be higher than me so that your bullets have no chance to hit each other. If you miss, there's a chance you hit your friends here. Jeb motioned with his thumb to the two kids standing in front of the Barnes & Noble. When we're all the same height, it gets really dangerous. Rufio held out a palm and motioned for the kids to get down. They knelt and aimed up at Jeb's face. Suddenly, their bullets no longer stood much chance of hitting friendlies. Clever kid.
Give us the gold, old man.
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Just put the case down and walk away. We don't want to shoot you.
Then don't shoot me. Jeb glanced around. You do realize there are more people right around the corner, right? I don't know what'll happen to you if you start popping off rounds in here, but it won't be good for you. Rufio stepped forward and pressed the gun to Jeb's chest.
Last chance.
Jeb wasn't inherently immune to bullets, his body still being within human limitations, and they weren't the kind of people he could go murder a hobo on, given their age. He could try to flip the safety of their guns on, but there were nearly a dozen of the little bastards. He could only do two at a time, and if they caught on before he was done, there was a good chance he would get shot. Or worse, a kid could get shot. Lesson one. Defuse the situation. Okay, you got me, Jeb said, sliding the bulb strap off his shoulder and lowering them slowly onto the ground, keeping his other hand raised as he did so. Can you at least tell me where the human selling magic stuff is? You know, assuming you didn't make him up?
Northwest side of the city, up against the coast. He's got a shop and a temp agency called Working Stiffs. You can't miss it.
Rufio flicked toward the door with his gun.
Now get lost, Pops.
You know, you guys would get a terrible Yelp review for this, Jeb said, hands up as he backed away out of the circle, armed children streaming around him, clustering around the bag of cash.
We welcome repeat business. Come back if you've got more cash to burn,
Rufio said with a grin before dismissing him entirely. I might take you up on that, Jeb said, picturing his sweet kidnapping revenge. Jeb backed away slowly as Rufio picked up the case, surrounded by the grasping hands of his henchmen. The farther away Jeb got, the less chance they would hit him or each other.
Calm down, calm down, he said, holding the case up out of the reach of the smaller children. We've got to get this out of sight before somebody...
Yoink!
Jeb infused the case of gold with a strand of mist and yanked it straight up out of the boy's palm. The children watched, dumbfounded, as the case sailed straight up, hovering 10 feet above them in the high ceilings of the semi-abandoned shopping mall.
Rufio, though?
Rufio's gaze followed the strand of orange gold mist back to Jeb, his eyes widening. Jeb whooped as he drew the satchel zipping through the air towards himself, catching it like a football before diving around the corner. For being totally armed children, there was a hell of a lot less gunfire than Jeb expected. None, actually. It's possible Rufio was aware giving children loaded guns in a crowded mall was a stupid idea, Jeb thought as he clumped full speed toward the exit. Still, Jeb would rather not test it. The click of his wooden leg echoed through the halls for a moment before the sound of screaming children and squeaking sneakers against polished concrete echoed from behind him. Rufio was the first one around the corner, and Jeb whipped a strand of telekinetic force, aiming to pull back the slide on the kid's...
Where's his gun?
Rufio thrust his hands forward, and Jeb spotted a bit of green mist condensing around the kid's palms before a blast of slime squirted out at fire hydrant pressure, covering every inch of the hall Jeb was standing in, including Jeb himself.
Whoa, shit!
Jeb's foot and peg leg flew out from under him as every surface in the mall's hallway suddenly became slippery as hell. Jeb's peg leg, held on to his stump by tension, slipped free and went spinning off into the distance while Jeb barely managed to hold on to the gold, the leather case trying to squirt out of Jeb's grasp at every opportunity.
These kids are trying to make me work for it.
Jeb was spinning at stomach-churning speed, sailing down the hall. In a matter of seconds, he would pass by the door leading to the parking lot. And there it goes.
Ugh!
Jeb rammed into a drinking fountain, the wind knocked out of him by his own mass. He unclenched his eyes and spotted the kid bum-rushing him, heedless of the omnipresent film of slime. Rufio lunged for the case on the way past, a narrow band of slime disappearing in front of the kid's grasping hand.
Nope.
Jeb wasn't strong enough to lift himself telekinetically, but the non-friction of the surroundings made that a non-issue. He yanked himself to the side, snatching the cash out of range and sliding toward the exit like a luge rider. One of the kids near the other side of the hall tried to jump for him, but slipped and face-planted on the ultra-slippery floor. Jeb squirted out the double doors into the light of day, yelping when the sliminess cut out suddenly and he began road-hauling himself across the pavement. Several alien patrons of the bazaar paused upon seeing a man hurtle out into the open air of the parking lot, scream, then hop around on one foot, but they shrugged and went about their business, cruising from one open-air stall to another, where the lower-quality goods were on display for the common man. Hopping in place and rubbing the road rash on his ass, Jeb eyed the dim double doorway, watching the children shy away from public spectacle. With a few sullen glances toward him, they faded from view, retreating back to their bookstore refuge.
God damn it.
Jeb was tempted to gloat, but he was an adult, and they did tell him where to find the guy he was looking for. He didn't want to owe these punks anything either.
Let's see, buying food for 12 kids. Gotta be expensive.
Jeb slipped a bulb out of his case and threw it through the doorway. The gold coin clattered into the mall's dim entrance, and a moment later, a tiny white hand snatched it off the ground before disappearing.
There, that's my good deed for the day,
Jeb thought, turning around and hopping away, stabilizing himself with his own mist. A minute later, he traded a few of his spending silver for a decent cane and clumped away.
Well, if there's one thing I've accomplished today, it's that I found some at-risk children to kidnap, preemptively rescue.
After a bit of clomping around and some advice from some concerned onlookers, Jeb found a prosthesis shop where he ordered a custom-built spring-aided piece of wood to walk on. Since he put 5 bulbs toward the down payment, they let him walk out with a simple loaner. The height was a little off compared to what he was used to, but Jeb had plenty of time to get used to it on the way to the working stiff temp agency.
Oh man, that was a lot of children. And I'm pretty sure the big one could see me. Children usually have a bit more mist when they're younger. You should have made some deals with those kids. Something as small as a little girl's stuffed teddy bear could have gotten us some serious juice.
I didn't think of it while they were pointing guns at me, Jeb said dryly. Smartass perked up for a moment.
Did I ever tell you why fairies like children so much?
I don't think you did, Jeb said, carefully clomping along the cobbled street, trying not to stumble on his loner leg and cane.
Then get ready for another wizard lesson. I don't know what the official word for the phenomenon of children having more impact is, but I like to call it time value, she said.
Lifespan?
Exactly. When you're young, you have tons of impact simply based on the sheer amount of potential lifespan you've got remaining. Barring violent injury or untimely death, if you take away a piece of a girl's innocence by trading her dolly for food, that experience echoes throughout her entire life. Boom! Huge amounts of impact for the price of a loaf of bread.
Smartass grinned maliciously, rubbing her hands together. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with taking a child's innocence, Jeb said, glancing at her askance.
Oh, come on. They're losing it by themselves all over the place. Why not take a piece of the pie?
Smartass waved her hand dismissively.
Childhood innocence has tons of mist, and it's great for the skin. Why else do you think so many lady wizards use it?
I'm starting to understand why Feral Society labeled you as a menace.
Who, me?
Smartass asked, her cheeks dimpled. Fae in general.
They haven't adapted to us. Not like humans have.
Oh?
You humans are inoculated. You've got cautionary tales about making deals with strange forces in the woods passed down from mother to child for thousands of years in every culture. Thus, when a stranger comes up and offers you a Faustian deal, you've long since been conditioned to nope right out of there. Frosian natives don't have that kind of deep history with us. Not yet, anyway. Did I use nope as a verb correctly? I'm still absorbing modern human vernacular.
You used it right. Jeb fell silent as he thought for a moment while he walked. Are you implying fairies existed on Earth?
Wizards, too, as recently as 400 years ago.
Smartass said, perching atop his head.
Then we came to Pharos.
Why?
I don't know.
Smartass kicked her heels against Jeb's eyebrows.
You'd have to ask an older fae than me. Good luck with that. They tend to be mean and not so awesome as me.
Smartass slapped her hands on her cheeks, nearly inside Jeb's field of view.
Oh my gosh, does this mean I'm about to stop being awesome?
I think you'll be fine. Jeb said, considering the ramifications of Smartass's words. Humans and Fae coexisted as recently as 400 years ago, and Fae have only been on Pharos for a short while? One more mystery to ponder. Icing on the weirdness cake. Jeb stored that information away for later perusal and focused on finding the human with magical gear for sale. The Working Stiff Temp Agency was a new business, just started a month ago by an upstart human who'd bought a vast section of land off the northwestern edge of the city. It was reputed to be a farm-slash-shop-slash-labor rental service, run by a single human proprietor. Jeb made out the shop nearly a quarter mile off, as the dense city died away to reveal row upon row of brilliant green vegetables sprouting in the beating sun. How does he water all these? Jeb wondered to himself. Was there some kind of aquifer or irrigation he wasn't aware of? He couldn't see anything to that effect. Gradually, the scene became clear as distant dots resolved into strange figures carrying oversized buckets of water. Closer to 50-gallon drums, he thought, studying the creatures. They had to be bigger than he thought originally. They definitely weren't human, but Jeb honestly didn't know what they were. From their silhouettes in the distance, they looked like driders from D&D, with a human upper torso and eight long legs with knobbly knees. Except they definitely weren't driders. As Jeb got closer, he could make out the strange creatures using the tools that were seemingly welded into their flesh to hoe, weed, and shovel dirt, replacing the occasional unhealthy crop with a new one. What horror is this? They did say this guy was human, didn't they? Jeb was starting to understand the general sense of unease people had when referring to this place. When Jeb got close enough to see the whites of their eyes, he saw there was nothing but whites. The creatures' eyes were glazed over with death, their skin slowly desiccating,
They were monstrous amalgams of body parts harvested from half a dozen different sources, fused together to make these makeshift all-purpose tractor creatures, then animated by foul magic. One of the creatures reached down with a slender leg and tapped the single two-legged figure working in the field on the shoulder, gaining its attention. It was a tall, slender man bearing a dusty hoe, wearing a woven straw hat over tufts of curly ginger hair, with a wet towel over his shoulders to help with the heat. He wore denim overalls over a white t-shirt and some obvious signs of repeated sunburn on his forearms. More specifically, it was Ron the Necromancer. Nancy, 8 years old.
Did we have to try and steal that old man's money? Stealing is bad.
Nancy didn't really have the words to describe how bad making other people sad felt, so she put the feeling into the word itself.
Maybe we didn't,
Colt said, flicking the shiny coin the old man had thrown at them between his knuckles.
But we didn't know that he'd actually pay us until after we attacked him.
The leader of the orphans chuckled. Nancy frowned, trying to make sense of Colt's logic. Sure, a few people had walked off with books without paying, and a few others had gotten answers, then left without paying. Then,
oh, I get it. Still, that was mean.
Gotta be mean to get by sometimes,
Colt said, pushing himself to his feet.
I'm going to go buy food with this. You guys lock the door after me, and don't open it until I get back, okay?
Because of Slenderman?
Nancy asked.
Pretty sure Slenderman doesn't exist,
Darius said. The older boy with plastic gold chains around his neck was reading a novel with a flashlight.
Jake said he saw him before he vanished, a tall, skinny man in a suit, with white skin.
That was a Keegan.
But he was wearing a suit.
Keegan in a suit, Darius shrugged. Hey,
Colt snapped his fingers and drew their attention back to himself.
Doesn't matter who or what is taking us, only that it needs to stop. Lock the door until I get back, okay?
What kind of food are you buying?
Nancy guessed with sudden realization.
Can I get some Reese's Cups?
Colt frowned at her, an expression that Nancy couldn't quite read. Sad or angry? Both?
I'll try.
Yay!
Nancy did a double fist bump, like she'd seen her dad do whenever he beat a game. It felt good.
No guarantees. Reese's are getting hard to come by.
Aw. What else are you getting? They're not charging gold for candy nowadays, are they?
Rice. Boo!
Catcalls echoed from every corner of the bookstore as the children heaped disdain upon their leader's plans.
Deal with it, Cole growled. Rice will last the longest. Any idea when the next rich guy is going to wander through looking for a book or a map?
They fell silent.
Didn't think so.
Cole pocketed the coin and headed out into the dim hallway. It was dim now, but things started to get really dark inside the mall when the sun went down. The shadows looked deep and hungry during the day, with plenty of room for wicked things to hide. At night, it was much worse, bad enough that Nancy couldn't see her hand in front of her face. Night wasn't very far away, either. Colt would have to travel back through the dark.
Colt will be fine. He made it through the hard tutorial and can see in the dark. He's practically a superhero.
Nancy thought to herself before Colt turned and looked her in the eye.
Lock the door,
he said, poking her in the snout.
You don't have to be mean,
Nancy said, sliding the door closed and flipping the knob with a click. The painting on the door obscured Colt as she listened to his sneaker softly scuff away. Darius stifled a yawn.
I'm gonna hit the sack.
Okay, good night,
Nancy said absently as she picked up a flashlight and began searching for something by Dr. Seuss.
Or whatever this is,
she thought as she pulled out a book from the shelf. It had a pretty cover with weird, blurry ink on the front. Lots of blues and purples.
Purple is the best.
Nancy took the book to her beanbag and shook the flashlight until it was bright again, sounding out the words on the cover.
The waitress hand.
Nancy looked up for confirmation on her pronunciation before realizing that Darius had already left to take a nap. Or play with Bess. Those two had been playing a lot together recently. Nancy wasn't dumb. K-I-S-S-I-N-G. It was the biggest word she knew, mostly thanks to the song about it.
Gross.
Nancy rolled her eyes, copying Mommy. The story, from what Nancy could tell, was about when a witch crept into a kid's bedroom, dripping snakes and spiders, breathing smoke, and the daddy... Nancy felt the tears begin to take hold as she watched the evil witch menace the fuzzy-haired daddy with a snake knife.
Just like my daddy.
But this daddy had won, because Mommy was there to help get Daddy's witch sword.
Nancy!
A whisper came from the door.
What?
Nancy's head came up, glancing at the paint-covered windows. There was a faint shadow against the glass, all distorted from the flickering firelight from the bazaar outside. It was about the right shape, though.
Nancy, open the door. I left something here.
Cole whispered.
Oh, okay.
Cole forgot stuff sometimes. It seemed like keeping track of all of them was a lot to remember, so he was a bit frazzled sometimes. That made sense.
I wish I could help more.
Nancy thought as she set the book aside, walking over to the door and clicking the lock open. She put her whole body into opening the stubborn door, grunting as she tugged. Once that was taken care of, she peeked out into the darkness.
Colt?
A pale white hand snaked out of the shadows and wrapped around Nancy's mouth, dragging her into the dark. Chapter 13. Networking. Ron glanced over at Jeb clumping down the road, patting his forehead with the damp towel. Then the mystic taxidermist did a double take.
Holy shit!
Ron dropped his hoe and leaped over the waist-high fence, landing on the dirt path outside his land and sprinting toward Jeb at a decidedly inhuman pace. Maybe not car speed, but definitely as fast as a four-wheeler.
Ron, hold up! I'm not...
Ron tackled Jeb's chest, sending both of them careening to the ground. The necromancer's arms were like living iron, squeezing Jeb with no regard for the sanctity of his bones.
We thought you were imprisoned by the Empire or dead or something. What happened?
If you don't let go,
Jeb gasped, staring up at the sky.
I might be.
Oh.
Ron released Jeb's waist and stood up, peering down at him quizzically. Jeb decided to stay down a little longer, poking his ribs to make sure they were whole.
So what's up, man?
Ron's eyes flickered to Smartass hovering above Jeb.
Smartass? Ron,
Smartass said, arms crossed. You want the long story or the short one? Jeb said, taking Ron's hand and pulling himself up to his foot.
Let's go with the long story. I got time.
Ron crooked his finger and the nearby tractor zombie lumbered closer.
Tell Tony to bring the good juice from the bottom shelf, along with some ice, and a bunch of wood for a gazebo. Yeah, bring Jack and Jesus.
The zombie lumbered off.
Semi-autonomous,
Ron said, motioning to the zombie with a flourish.
Figured it out a few days after we got out.
So what happened, everyone? Jeb asked. I'm very curious.
That makes two of us,
Ron said, motioning for Jeb to follow.
You show me yours, I'll show you mine.
Gross, but acceptable. Ron chuckled. Ron led him to a gate leading to the inside of the property, and together they followed a little dirt path, until they came to an artesian well where water simply squirted out into the air on its own, and zombies lined up to fill water barrels. There was a refreshing mist of water in the air, and Ron motioned for the rotting corpses to wander off while they sat down next to the splashing fountain. Jesus and Jack were codenames for Ron's lumber-based zombies, with saws, hammers, planers, and more fused to their insectoid limbs. In a matter of minutes, they constructed shelter from the sun around the two of them while they spoke. Jeb told everything he could about the last couple months. He left out fairy impact harvesting techniques and his suspicions about the lump on his head, but for the most part, he told the necromancer everything.
That's total bullshit,
Ron said, shaking his head. To be fair, option number one was killing me, Jeb said.
So you're supposed to kiss the ground they walk on? Assholes.
I don't think they're universally assholes, or even evil, Jeb said, rubbing the ring on his finger.
Well, whatever. I'm sure you'll be fine. You got a knack for being the underdog. What are you planning to do without a class, though?
Jeb held up a finger. I told you what happened to me. Now you tell me what happened to everyone else.
Let's see,
Ron said, setting his mug of fruit juice on his knee.
Well, when we got there, they congratulated us and threw us this huge party.
He stared into Jeb's eyes.
I'm talking a huge party. And there was every kind of entertainment you could possibly ask for. I mean it. There were these Milas dancers who...
How about we focus on the survivors?
Ahem.
Ron cleared his throat.
Right. So we were at this party, and after the festivities had wound down, the Emperor gathered us all in the same room, and he gave us this amazing speech about how we should all consider working together with the Empire to ease the transition. Politics-type stuff, you know? He offered us citizenship for free, as well as jobs to the ones who were interested.
He said all this in his speech? Jeb asked. Ron frowned.
You know what? I don't really remember the specifics of the speech.
You don't remember, but it was amazing? Jeb asked, little alarm bells going off in his head. What's your nerve?
27,
Ron said, staring out into his farm, idly thumbing the handle of his drink.
Anyway, a lot of us took him up on the citizenship thing, but only a few of us wanted to actually work for the Empire.
Let's not poke at the gaps in his memory, Jeb thought. As far as he knew, 27 was enough nerve to remember nearly everything in crystal clear detail. The specifics of his speech fell well inside that category. The fact that Ron couldn't remember the speech word for word implied missed or a class ability. Who all did what? Jeb asked.
Well, Freeman retired to the remains of Louisiana looking for his family. Brett and Amanda jumped onto the Empire train in exchange for land and titles. They're technically the highest-ranked human aristocracy now.
Those whores, Jeb said with a grin.
Yeah,
Ron chuckled.
Jess? She broke up with me.
Jeb struggled to keep a straight face as the young necromancer tried to drown his sorrows in juice. A relationship that started with a fling spurred on by the certainty of imminent death wasn't exactly the bedrock that you build a life on.
She took an enforcer job. She's off who knows where, killing people.
She did get the assassin class to start with, Jeb said with a shrug. That has to imply she was at least willing to kill people before.
I know, Ron grumbled. Casey and Mike, they didn't take the Empire job. They sold a bit of their share and opened a living restaurant. I was aimless for a while. Then I realized if Casey can capitalize on free labor, why can't I? So I decided to buy a farm. More of a plantation, really. In a couple of weeks, I'll have my first crop. These boys are just smart enough to lend out, so I get a little extra spending money that way,
Ron said, patting Jesus, the zombie carpenter, on the leg. Why not take the Empire up on the job thing? Jeb asked, but he was pretty sure he already knew the answer.
Something I realized in the tutorial? I'm not cut out for fighting.
Ron shook his head.
I spent every day for years just playing a necromancer in D&D, imagining how I'd be some kind of lord of the dead, master of all I survey, but, man, that's not my scene. The idea of actually killing people makes me insanely sick to my stomach. And if there's anything that makes you recognize your own mortality, it's seeing people drop like flies around you.
Ron shrugged.
All I want to do now is get by.
Jeb tapped his fingers on the back of his hand. What did you mean when you said, share?
The haul from the shipping area, plus the reward from the system for killing the world tortoise. You didn't... get that?
Jeb sighed. No, I didn't get that. Although I did drink my share from the shipping area.
Oh.
Ron rubbed his neck uncomfortably.
Well, your share is sitting in the Empire's vault. We all decided to set some aside in case you were still alive. Freeman left all his share behind, and we added it in. The only problem was we couldn't figure out who was going to babysit a mountain of loot indefinitely, so the Emperor let us use his vault.
I'm sure he was happy to do that, Jeb said, tone flat.
We were half convinced you'd vaporized or some such,
Ron shrugged.
Seemed like as good a place as any.
Well, I'll look into claiming that one day, if it becomes an option, Jeb said.
Did you need money?
Ron asked.
'Cause I could...
Jeb held his hand up, then revealed the case of gold hanging from his shoulder. Today, I'm looking to buy. Ron's face split into a boyish grin.
Fella, you've come to the right place.
You're okay if this breaks? Jeb asked one last time, holding the ivory ring between his fingers.
Knock yourself out, man. I don't even need it anymore.
Jeb tugged off his appraiser and blew smoke out of it while Ron looked on in fascination. Ring of mist, plus 3. Crafted by a jeweler to find her child that had been spirited away, this ring offers a glimpse into the unseen world. The jeweler poured years of her life and lost her eye to the creation of this artifact in hopes that she could locate him again. In the end, the ring itself was traded for her son's life, but the boy was greatly diminished, and she could never again see him without the aid of the ring she had bargained away.
That's really cool,
Ron said, watching the roiling mist form a solid panel, suspending the ring in the top. Jeb grunted and caught the mist ring on the way back down, then slipped it on his finger. The ring seemed to relax around his finger, growing wider as it engulfed his digit. Jeb's temples began to pound, and he knew it was working. He used the appraiser on himself. Jebediah Trapper, Mystic Trapsmith, level 39, accolades, Krusker's Brawn, Siren's Cunning, Rub-Rub-Rub-Use Mysteries, Gresh's Subtlety, Innovator, Vagros's Power, Body, 21, 9, Mist, 71, 16 plus 3, Nerve, 26, 10, Abilities, Mystic Trigger, Accolade Pending, Lagros's Power suspended due to multiple instances, awaiting resolution. Attention! This user has been flagged for exclusion from the system by executive order. There it is. Thank God I can still inflate my stats. How much you want for it? Jeb asked.
For you?
Ron asked.
On the house. These, on the other hand?
Ron ran his fingers over the case full of artifacts before opening the wooden lid with a dramatic flourish.
These will cost you.
Jeb nearly squinted at the sheer amount of wealth on display, blasting him in the face. Ron didn't actually have to work a day in his life. The farm was just something to do. I'll take the slave callers, Jeb said, pointing. That's right. Ron snagged these at the end of the tutorial. I need control lenses and examples of circuitry. Jeb went through and started identifying the wands on display. Wand of Flowing Barriers. The ultimate intersection between personal protection and affordability. LifeAid's Wand of Flowing Barriers releases a thin film that instantly settles into the air, creating a malleable barrier that is difficult and time-consuming to penetrate, giving you the opportunity to escape or launch a counterattack. Whether you need protection from monsters or simply need to buy time to make yourself presentable, LifeAid is on your side. Warning, choking hazard. Do not use Wand of Flowing Barriers in a manner other than for its intended purpose. Do not tamper with Wand of Flowing Barriers. Doing so voids all warranty and may result in serious injury or death. LifeAid is not liable for any damages caused by using the product other than for its intended purpose. Jeb set aside the pearlescent wand and tossed the next one into the appraisal cloud. It was a simple steel tube with a ruler stamped into the metal side,
and a couple different sliding focus rings along the side. Wand of Sandblast. The right tool for every job. The Wand of Sandblast sends a fine blast of sand out, potentially blinding opponents. But wait, there's more! The Wand of Sandblast can also be used to sand furniture and other projects, even steel and gemstones. It can even be used to cut and polish at different settings. It's the perfect gift for the crafty son of a bitch in your family this holiday season. Warning, blinding hazard. Do not use Wand of Sandblast in a manner other than for its intended purpose. Do not tamper with the Wand of Sandblast. Doing so avoids all warranties and may result in serious injury or death. Richter's is not liable for any damages caused by using product other than for its intended purpose. Interesting. Next. Wand of Translocated Vision. Need a clear point of view to fill out that map or find true north when the canopy is blocking the sun from view? Look no further than the Wand of Translocated Vision. Creates a temporary invisible sensor linked to the caster at the focal point of the wand, with a practical range of up to 100 feet. The user's viewpoint will switch to the sensors immediately upon casting. Scout Rabsy Dens in advance. Check around the corner of that tunnel for lurking Smorlocks. All without exposing yourself to danger. Smart wizards choose Tenacity, TM. May cause nausea. Tenacity TM is not liable for any motion sickness or temporary loss of vision the user may experience. Do not use Wand of Translocated Vision in a manner other than for its intended purpose. Do not tamper with the Wand of Translocated Vision. Doing so voids all warranty and may result in arrest for spying on the opposite sex. It boggles my mind the gulf between the hyper-consumer tone of wands versus the grim fairy tale tone of rings, Jeb said, holding up the ivory ring on his hand.
I think it's because rings can't be mass-produced, Ron said. I mean, you made your fireball wand in less than a week with scraps. I wouldn't know the first thing about these rings.
Something to think about, Jeb thought, eyeing the ivory ring.
Okay, two slave collars, the bubble wand, sand wand, peeping wand, and the gold ring of body plus three. That'll be 1,100 bulbs or 70 pounds of gold bullion. Would you like me to wrap that up for you?
Ron asked with a hint of a smile. Can I get a...
That is at a discount.
Just the barrier wand for now, then, Jeb said. I'll be back in a couple of days with more gold.
I don't doubt it. I'll be holding on to these for you until then.
Jeb wanted to grumble aloud and impugn Ron's family, but that would be a lie, so he settled for a glare. Thanks for the ring, Ron. Jeb waved as he headed out, completely bled of gold by the heartless monster.
You're welcome. Come back any time. You too, smartass.
Smartass waved from Jeb's shoulder before giving the necromancer a raspberry. Jeb walked down the road, passing the occasional rusting heap of steel that hadn't been moved out of the street yet. I wonder if I could use Ron as reinforcements, Jeb thought, ignoring the sounds of overcrowding people fighting over scraps of food and children screaming. The usual. Jeb had only two moral compunctions about using Ron's zombies as extra workforce. First, he could see 1,000 different ways that Ron's zombies could get caught trying to steal children, and those zombies were indisputably Ron's. Good way to get the ginger set upon by a mob with torches and pitchforks. And second, the kid said he wasn't a fighter. The only reason he'd been a fighter in the tutorial was because the alternative was death. Ron's greatest aspiration was to start a business, get married, and have kids. He was already halfway there. As soon as ladies figured out the necromancer was young, single, had money, food, a place to live, and protection, well, he was about to get very popular. As soon as a woman was brave enough to investigate the mysterious owner of Working Stiffs. Better to keep Ron out of the splash zone blame-wise. I'd rather have him available for the long term rather than get him arrested or killed. So if I'm not using Ron, then what's my in? I need to start yanking kids off the street, but without getting caught. I was considering using a custom-built zombie to somewhat disguise my involvement from the casual observer, but that's not gonna fly. Honestly, Jeb didn't have the first clue how he would go about stealing children, because he wasn't a psycho child predator. I guess the first thing I would do is find some kids living on their own to steal. Jeb thought back to the kids dwelling in the bookstore. Check. Then I would case them, either by myself or with loyal investigators. Then, as soon as I got a solid idea of their comings and goings, I would exploit some flaw in their child logic and lure one away from the group and pick them off. Not checked. Maybe I should have bought the peeping Tom wand. Jeb had prioritized his own protection over information gathering, and it looked like that was going to slow down his job. Not by a lot, given he was about to go home and begin producing gold bullion. I wonder if I could hire a private investigator. No, it might be better to buy one from the slave house. Then I know they're not involved.
Nancy!
A single voice cut through the chatter of humans littering the streets, dragging Jeb's thoughts back to the present.
Nancy!
Another voice echoed through the streets. Young. Jeb frowned and changed the direction of his foot, heading toward the voices.
Nancy, where are you?
Jeb turned down an alley that connected to the next road over. Several men sat in the alley, conserving their energy, ribs sticking out like dry twigs of a mummy. Jeb passed them without a second glance. Can't save everyone. Jeb followed the voices to a small back road where he spotted about 24 children marching through the street, hollering Nancy at the top of their lungs, many of them crying. There's Rufio, Jeb thought, eyes narrowing as a memory triggered.
And now you told a stranger Nancy's name. Great. Good job.
There Nancy is missing? Today? Jeb had been close enough to bump shoulders with the culprit. Had the bastard been listening when the kids mentioned Nancy's name and used that to steal her? Jeb quickly ran through his memory of the day's events and didn't remember anyone being close enough to have heard them. There was nobody in eyeshot. But there was a distinct possibility that Jeb had seen them immediately before or after if they'd been close enough to eavesdrop with magic. Damn, I wish child killers would just wear signs that said, I'm the bad guy. Make life a lot simpler. Jeb lurked in the dark of the alleyway for a moment, casing the 24 mewling children of varying age, considering his options. His gaze settled on Rufio, the teenage leader of the pack. I need an in. He has an in. He's a fighter, and he's got a bone to pick with the guy stealing his people. Oh, God. I'm considering working with a teen. Kill me now. Rather than off himself, as was appropriate, Jeb followed the wandering horde of children until they mostly ran out of gas. Some of them still shouted for Nancy, while others wrapped their arms around their legs and curled up like pill bugs, weeping into the unfeeling asphalt. Their leader had pulled ahead of the rest of them, calling out the girl's name incessantly, his voice hoarse from overuse. Now is a good opportunity, Jeb thought to himself, spooling out a strand of mist and extending it to where Rufio was staring blankly at the side of a building. With a little bit of effort, Jeb formed the string of glowing orange mist into some respectably legible writing, slipping it out onto the road. Shut up. You and me are going to have a talk. Come into the alley. Rufio's eye scanned the invisible message, then tracked over to where Jeb was pulling the unspent mist back into his core. From the distance, Jeb probably looked like, well, like an older dude stalking children through the dark streets of L.A. after dark looming in an alley. In essence, not good. Jeb crooked his finger, grinning evilly at the grieving teen. This'll determine if this is the kind of kid I can use. If he screams for his friends, he was a little too smart to use. If you believe Jeb right off the bat, he was too dumb. Ideally, Rufio would come alone, take nothing at face value, then try to kill Jeb. That was the kind of bloodhound Jeb needed. Rufio glanced back at his friend, squared his shoulders, and marched toward the alley, his expression grim. Okay, so he's not too smart. Let's see if he's too dumb.
What do you want, Pops?
He asked, raising his chin arrogantly at Jeb in a punch-me-here kind of way. God, I hate kids, because they all inevitably become teens. Before we begin, Jeb said, choosing his threats carefully, if you repeat what I'm about to tell you to anyone before it becomes common knowledge, I will literally give you a caning. Jeb clicked his cane against the ground for emphasis. He meant it, too. Rufio crossed his arms.
Spill!
I'm hunting the guy who took Nancy. I want your help flushing him out, Jeb said.
How the fuck do you know about Nancy?
Rufio bristled.
Because you're walking down the street shouting her name, Jeb hissed. Look, my plan involves housing you guys somewhere safe to flush the guy out. Direct his attention towards me.
Somewhere safe, huh?
Rufio asked.
View this objectively. You kids represent a large pool of free power to some morally bankrupt cocksucker. If we remove your kids from circulation, the culprit's got to make a move if he wants the metaphorical gravy train to keep running.
Sounds like you've thought about this a lot.
It's my job, Jeb shrugged.
So, what do you want me to do?
Well, all you have to do is give me custody of your friends here and send any more you find my way. Simple.
How do I know that you're not the one that took Nancy?
Rufio demanded, whipping his pistol out and pointing it at Jeb's forehead. Jeb extended a strand of mist out his foot through the ground and snuck it up behind Rufio.
You were there when he said her name. You were standing right there. Were you watching us?
Passing marks. You've never seen me before then, have you? Jeb said, slowly raising his hands. I just arrived in town. Ask around.
You expect me to believe anyone is interested in helping us?
The teen demanded, the gun shaking in his hands as he psyched himself up to commit murder.
No, you gotta be the guy. You killed Nancy.
Well, if that's what you believe, pull the trigger, Jeb said, reaching a tendril of mist up from behind and beneath, flicking the safety on.
Rufio's eyes narrowed and he squeezed the trigger. Predictably, nothing happened. The next couple of seconds were a blur of motion. Rufio dropped the gun, stretching out his left hand and reaching for a pebble with his right. Green mist gathered in his left palm. Jeb whipped out his barrier wand and flooded it with mist while pulling it from one side to the other like closing a curtain. The pearlescent wand of flowing barriers created what appeared at first to be a massive soap bubble. Take a giant wobbly bubble made by a huge bubble maker, flatten it a bit, and give it the ability to harden into a tough resinous substance, and you've got the idea. The thin wobbly film turned from pearlescent to a hard sheen as it cured a fraction of a second before a blast of mist slime scattered off its surface. Rufio snatched a pebble off the ground and whipped it forward with the tips of his fingers. The tiny bit of rock smashed into the resinous substance between them, creating a trumpet-shaped deformation in the wall as its energy was stolen by the semi-stretchy material. It was a bit like watching ballistics gel stop a bullet. The gun clattered to the ground, and Rufio threw three more rocks, stretching the wall until it began to turn pearlescent again from the strain. Better leave soon, Jeb thought, reaching into his pocket with his free hand. Jeb took out a notepad and scratched down the address of his mansion.
Come visit sometime. We can talk about how you can help me catch the guy. And remember, if you tell others about me before they already know, I will beat you with a stick.
He stuck the note to the tacky wall of clear magical resin and began clomping away. The wall was starting to degrade along the edges already, and Jeb didn't want to go for round two until the kid had had a chance to calm down. Rufio didn't chase him. Just stood there at the edge of the alley, fists clenched tight. Jeb clumped his way back to his home in the dark of night, keeping his head on a swivel for teens with misguided anger and robbers who were just plain hungry. He wasn't able to relax until he set foot inside the mansion. Jeb hung his overcoat on the rack and stomped his way to the kitchen, where he was pleased to discover Mrs. Lang making sandwiches, half a dozen at a time with a practiced hand. Jeb melted into the stool on the other side of the bar, listening to the pounding of hammer and nail, sawing, and general boisterous atmosphere of the janitors and handymen fixing the holes in the staircase.
I smell paint. Where did we get paint?
The boys took your Jeep and raided a Home Depot,
the matronly old woman said, passing Jeb a sandwich.
Nice. Jeb took a bite. Free is good.
Don't talk with your mouth full.
She took a second glance at Jeb's haggard expression.
Long day?
Jeb said with a shrug. Bit of a mixed bag. A bunch of people threw me out of their shops for being human,
Almost got robbed. A kid tried to kill me a couple times. I met a friend from the tutorial. Oh, and I think a little girl got killed this evening by the guy I'm looking for. Mrs. Lang's hand froze, knife seized tight in her trembling fingers.
You're going to kill him, right?
That's the plan, Mrs. Lang.
Good.
Her knife resumed spreading the homemade mayo. Jib finished his food and checked in on Eddie. The first thing he noticed was the generator running outside the old man's man cave. It was rather quiet, with what looked like a series of mufflers welded to the exhaust and an extra-large tank. Deeper inside, the old man had an extension cord leading from the generator, connected to several electrical goodies, namely a computer and what looked like an extra fancy 3D printer. On the floor was a smorgasbord of engines, motors, and bits and pieces of electrical components that Jeb couldn't even hope to name. In the corner was a bomb-diffusing bot with all its armor stripped away. The old man was drafting something on the computer. His bifocal slipped down the bridge of his nose as he leaned in closer than strictly necessary and muttered to himself. How's it going?
Completely breaking the laws of physics, that's how it's going.
He pointed at the mist engine in the center of the room, feeding a trickle of mist through Jeb's regulator and into the gasoline lens, which trickled liquid fuel into a receiver, which in turn pumped it into the generator's tank, supplying the entire mansion with power. Are you telling me you can see the mist being used by that thing? Jeb glanced at the whirling vortex of pale mist being drawn into the tiny hole at the top of the engine.
Yep. How can it behave like a vapor, then a light ray?
Eddie clutched his head and winced for a moment.
Never mind. I gotta get those levels. But he will be done in a day or so. Then we'll see if you're pulling my leg.
Did you make the thing I asked you for? Jeb asked.
Right over there,
Eddie said, waving his hand toward the bench dismissively, his gaze sliding back to the drafting program.
Now shut up! Motherfucker!
Eddie growled when an error message popped up. Where did you get the 3D printer? Jeb asked, picking up the length of steel. It didn't look like one of the household 3D printers he'd seen in the past. It was big and industrial-looking, with welded plating and exposed guts twitching as the arm moved around.
I stole it from Chuck's house.
Who's Chuck?
He was my nemesis. He's dead now, and I know he would have hated to see me using his baby.
Eddie cackled. Well, you look like you've got everything well in hand. Eddie grunted. Jeb left his technician alone and went to the room close to the stairs that he'd claimed for himself, passing by the men painting the walls with a nod. Jeb entered his room and closed the door behind him, then sat down on the bed and stared at the wall. Well, I guess we're doing this. Jeb glanced down at the metal rod in his hand. It was a length of steel about a foot long with a wicked blade hook on the end. The hook itself was tiny, about half an inch from end to end. The reason being? Jeb slipped the appraiser off his finger and put the hook through it. Holding the two objects with both hands, Jeb began to awkwardly probe around his scalp. Tap, tap, tap. The side of the hook bumped against his skin. Until it hit something that wasn't Jeb. There you are, you little bastard.
Chapter 14. Can't go back. Nancy's eyes popped open and she sat up, her heart beating so fast.
Where am I?
She craned her neck, looking around the room. The walls and ceiling were clean-looking except for the smudges above the lamps, which seemed to be made of shiny gold. The walls they attached to were as red as blood, with off-white pillars supporting them. They reminded Nancy of bone. She felt tears begin to well in her eyes as she realized that she had absolutely no idea where she was.
Please, don't cry. A smooth voice said from her left.
Eep!
In a flash of movement that even Nancy had trouble following, she catapulted off the red velvet couch and hid behind the back of the furniture. Slenderman was sitting on the chair to her left. She hadn't seen him yet because he'd been so still.
My name is Lena Serpia. I rescued you from a reaper last night. You must have been exhausted, because you slept most of the day.
Nancy peeped above the edge of the oversized couch. There, sitting on an extra fancy-looking chair, was Slenderman in a black suit. He had no lips and a piercing stare, his bony fingers folded over each other on his lap. I shouldn't look.